Hey everyone, we got angels being all prestigious. We got jazz that spells the end of the world. We're following the music as we talk about episode 2 and 3 of Preacher Season 3. Join us.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh boy. Ooh, it's all about that music. Hey, everyone. Ben can't join us today, and so I'm filling that's in for life. Lead. And, you know, that's life, everyone. And we're going to talk about episode 2 and 3 of Preacher season 3. I'm just like Ben, except I don't wear pants. So welcome. And he's wearing a suit. But I am here with the chat. I'm going to talk to you on the chat. So please join us if you're listening live. We're going to talk about episode 2 first and then episode 3 in the second half. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, we know we're kind of cutting. I think we're actually taping this a little before the East Coast gets to see it. So if that's the case, join us later. Please still listen. Give us 5 stars. Now let me introduce our panel to join us in the Preacher Talk. Please introduce yourself. Matt, right hand.
I am Matt Maher, everybody. Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm so pumped to be here.
Yeah.
Very excited to be here. You can find all my stuff at mattmaher.tv or at TheMattMaher. It's 2 T's, 2 R's.
What's going on, guys? My name is Nate Miller. You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate, and I host a few other after shows on here, AfterBuzz as well.
Awesome. And I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MRDaveChild or DaveChild.com. And, ooh, boy, do we have a lot to talk about, because we're talking about 2 episodes.
We do.
We're talking about 2. But you only saw 1.
I know. I didn't see 3, everybody.
Shame.
I failed on my first day.
Matt.
So, and they asked me, like, do you want to be here and watch? I was like, I don't think I can. So we're going to talk about 2, and then I'm going to peace out, and then I'll be back next week. I'm going to watch 3. I'll watch 4.
So we're going to have these 3 tiers of spoilers. We're going to talk about episode 2, and then Matt's going to leave, and then we're going to talk about episode 3, and then everyone who doesn't read the comics can leave, and then we're going to talk about comics. So
we'll have to talk about 2 and 3.
Yeah, to talk about 2 and 3 to do with the comics. So we got a lot to do.
We got a lot.
Let's dive right into it. Okay, so Mumbai Towers. I wrote Saint right next to it, so that's why I thought it was Saint Towers. Because the first thing I want to talk about is the Saint of Killers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who I'm so glad we can finally call him the Saint of Killers. First season, we had to keep calling him the cowboy or the gunslinger, and it was so annoying. So Saint of Killers, coming after Custer. He tries the voice. The voice doesn't work, which is interesting, because that's different from the comics. But voice doesn't work. And so they hit the road, and what do they notice on the TV, and who could they talk to but Fior, who's playing at the Mumbai Towers. So that's where they go. And what do you guys think of this episode before we kind of dive into everything that happens?
I thought it was great. I thought it was an excellent follow-up to the premiere as well.
Right?
Too.
Yeah.
It didn't feel lagging, you know, at season 2. It's like they threw everything at us at season 1, and now it's like, okay, we're going to settle. And it wasn't that. It was just like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. I was a little worried we were going to settle back into the slowness of season 1.
Yeah.
And it was nice to have another episode that was just boom.
I actually thought this episode was funnier, too.
Yeah, it was.
It was even funnier, yeah.
Because we also got to see, as soon as we know we're heading towards Fior, we get to find out what has happened to Fior this entire time.
Yes.
And I kind of love what his story is. And because they've... something that's in the show is we know the fact that when angels die, they get killed. They just pop up, like, close by out of nowhere and then just walk back out. So they kind of introduced... They introduced this game and this joke of, like, the angels kind of always popping up and coming back and still having a dead body there. And so they were able to use it and make him a magician working at this casino, which was kind of perfect. Also, I love the fact that he's just suicidal, but because he can't kill himself, he's just always coming back.
Yes.
And doing that. It was, what do you guys think of that? It was just felt like it was always, it felt like it was so funny. And it kept moving.
I'm quickly starting to love this show for the montages.
Yeah,
they're getting very, very good at them. I would say close to like Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul level of perfect music choice, and the editing is always spot on. But they're also timely, and like they serve a purpose too. It's not just a montage just to be lazy. It's a montage for a reason. For you know. the trip that they go through, and you know, a couple other ones that we see throughout this episode and also the next one too.
Yeah.
But it just, it looks great, and it's, it just carries a lot of energy, momentum with the show too.
Yeah, it seems to be part of the humor is like the building.
Well, it had a build. Like the montage even had a build, you know, because he's like kind of killing himself the normal way. And I mean, as I was laughing, I was like, this is so effed up, Matt, that this is like hysterical to me.
I was trying to figure out what he was doing at first, because he hung himself and then he came back and then he went out and gambled and got the chips. And like, I think he was, I think we were supposed to see him like searching for happiness or joy or some type of.
Because if I'm wrong, I think he was supposed to go back to hell. That was what he was doing back at that bus stop, because that bus stop is how you get to hell.
Yes,
because if you take the right bus with the right person, then you can go back to hell.
I saw that hell bus stop as kind of just like a place that will take you to multiple, as kind of like a pathway crossing of sorts.
Yeah.
So maybe of the supernatural
crossroads.
To get to many different places. Because we saw him waiting too for a couple.
Yeah.
Two or three different vans went by.
Yeah. And I get the sense that he was maybe supposed to go to hell, like the preacher asked him to do, to try and get Arsface.
Yeah.
And did that happen after they originally went to
see
believe
the Saints? So. I wasn't able to, like, I didn't go back and watch, so someone can correct us on the chat if we're wrong. But I believe he kind of made a very loose promise to kind of, like, go back to hell. Because when Custer showed up and saw him, he's like, you didn't go back to hell. You said you would be able to maybe get Arsface. And that's how they got to hell. I remember that. That's how they were able to. Yeah.
So didn't he tell them to go to hell and they went to hell to go get Arsface and then ended up recruiting the Saint instead?
I think
that's how it played out.
Yeah. I mean, I think we don't know if they deliver. He said go to hell and they all along were planning on getting the Saint.
Right. So this was him like just after coming back from hell and he's just at the bus stop.
Yes. This is just after they talked to the Saint.
Okay.
And he just comes back. So, like, I'm assuming he got out of hell in the same bus that he got there from.
Yeah.
So then he's sitting there at the bus stop like, well, where do I go now? You know, I'm not my best friend of all time forever is dead.
Just dead, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to go after Jesse to get Genesis back because I can't get out of the can. Even if I can't, it goes back.
Yeah.
I've already sicked the Saint of Killers on him. If I go anywhere near, I'm just going to get blown up.
Kind of takes the third bus wherever it goes.
Just like, exactly. Goes. Like, where are you? Take me wherever. And that's what's so great, too, about the montage, because it displays that, like, lackadaisical, like, uncaring for life, trying to kill himself, can't. You know, even though he hates life, he can't even kill himself.
Yeah.
He's so screwed up. But then the fact that he just accidentally falls into this magician things by trying to kill himself in the middle of the show was just, like, brilliant.
I actually did a spit take when he put that microphone in the ice, but I actually did a full-on, I just did a spit take. It was so fun. Because I thought that was such a great, it was such a different way of building. And then, like, you know, you expect, like, if in any type of montage, it's always, like, something is bigger and it's bigger and bigger, and this was like the opposite, and that they were kind of building to it. It was just such this, I don't know the word, I'm going to say lackadaisical, but y'all are going to find out I don't use words right. But it was just like a lazy way of killing himself, you know, just
I do want to go back a little bit just to shout out two things real quick before we move on. One is that the beginning scene that we saw with the Saint and stuff, I thought was really great, the way they like portrayed the character. That they did a really cool camera tilt as he like raised his guns. That was so cool. Mm. That really adds to like the power and weight of him, you know, moving as this demonic monster. And then also too, this is those moments where like you know that it's Preacher and like it has the Preacher feels of like the comic book,
right?
Where the group that comes out and it's like the gun convention,
it's
and
like they shoot an NRA
another
type.
Problem solve
yeah.
the guns,
yeah.
And it's just so good. The irony,
what can't guns do?
Yes, it's just so good. The writing is just hilarious. The timing was great,
and I love how like the smallest woman there
has the
grenade,
And I like that we finally found out that, you know, and we find out later for certain. I kind of got a sense that, you know, we talked about it last week, that the Saint was tracking him by him using the voice.
Yes, but we didn't know that for sure.
But we got confirmation of that this time.
Yeah.
My only issue is the scream that the Saint, like, yells out at the end of that scene in the beginning. It just seemed out of character.
That did seem out of character.
Too much emotion,
I totally thought that,
because, I mean, and and that's funny coming from someone who hasn't even read the comic, because yeah. I thought for me it was just because, you know, comic Saint is very stoic, very quiet, like very evil, mean son of a bitch, but not expressive right. in any way. So I mean, it was primal and some of like a monstery way, but it did seem somewhat out of character.
I felt like it was more of like the rhythm of the story rather than yeah. the character.
Okay, motivation. That makes sense.
So, which I think was maybe that's why it felt like such an odd choice, because uh-huh. I think this show seems to be very all about the rhythm of it right now, especially season two. I think yeah. season one, not yeah, yeah, so yeah. much, mm-hmm. but this one, so they kind of wanted to hit that big beat before mm-hmm. they move on to the mm-hmm. next scene.
And they're hitting that rhythm perfectly between, you know, the action and violence and also some really nice plot and then also great comic relief. Like, the yeah. way they weave them in and out, like Cassidy's lines about the Terminator jokes.
Oh, yeah, right. I love
it's
that.
It's great.
He's
and
like,
then,
Terminator 1, Terminator 2.
And then he, you know, and then the Lord of the Rings reference when he says maybe he's a Nazgul, and Preacher's like, you know, don't tell me that we're going to go look for Gandalf. Like, just little right. things like that. Not only are they hilarious, but like, it shows...
Don't you mention Gandalf again.
Yeah, but it's great references for the culture, too, because they know people watching this show are, you know, nerds and comic fans, people that are interested in that nature. Yeah. Right. So not only is it, you know, culturally relative and funny, but the timing is just perfect. Like, there's just so many things about it, and it just fits so well. It doesn't feel forced. Like, oh, look at our no. comic book reference. Like, it just feels really natural for the characters.
And they've really built up these really strong characters that we get to kind mm-hmm. of find out who they are as it moves on.
Between this, I mean, he was great in the premiere, and I loved him in the first season, but this episode and you know, 3-2, Cassidy, mm-hmm. in my opinion, is stealing this show.
Yes.
Yeah,
he
I
is
agree.
So good. I've agree. Loved this actor ever since I saw him in Misfits.
Yeah.
I just love the way he talks, but his comedic timing is great.
It just feels like he's creepy casting.
Yeah,
he's
it's
just so
perfect.
He and, steals the show as much as Cassidy.
And even
in the
then,
comics,
and he has this thing he does with his eyes where, like, in the few serious moments that he has with Cassidy, like, you really believe the weight and stuff behind it. So right. I'm a big fan of his.
Which is, yeah, it's great what he can do. So in and he has this great moment in just to kind of move fast because we had to talk about two episodes here. But the way he connects with Fjord. In the
that's a great montage too.
So good,
and
even
so
just,
good.
Even just the way it starts when he's like, you know, how long is this going to take? Give me 2 hours and 45 minutes, like exactly.
Minutes.
And then the clock yeah. pops up,
and it was a like... great little like, it was a great act break there because when he comes in, he's like, "Hey, settle down," and he's got a blowtorch. We all think he's going to torture him.
Yes,
we think this is like, oh, this is where the yeah. dark Cassidy comes out.
Right,
this is where it gets really deep, and then he just shows this buffet line. Of drugs. Like, we're gonna bond.
And even just
and then he kills him the first
that was just
time.
So, that was just so good. Like, there are, you could put lots of different characters in that similar situation and it would be funny, but that's such a unique joke to take because of the already established lore with Fjord and him coming back.
Yeah.
That them taking that opportunity was just perfect. It was
yeah.
just so good.
That was so good. And then they just, I also just love the fact that Fjord, all he really needed and wanted was another
best
friend.
Yeah.
And he just wanted a friend, and he just wanted that connection.
And it makes sense, because a vampire would be very similar to an
yeah.
angel, because he's immortal, he's lived a long time, he's, you know...
They
and
could both do immense amount of drugs
they
without
do
getting
drugs,
hurt.
They could, even like everything, as like, you know, if drugs as somebody who's like, as I'm gay, and so to see like, you know, when somebody's lived for a long time, like even kind of like the gender, or
yeah.
not the gender, but like the kind of, that's the same kind of with the relationship Fjord had.
Right.
You're like, were they
open.
Boyfriends? Were they friends? Like, and it, like they were in the hot tub, and I was going, what the hell is happening? I didn't
yeah.
know. I got very excited, but nothing happened. But, but still, I love that because I think that's realistic too. Because you think if you've lived like thousands and thousands of years, even I would be like, oh, I'll do stuff with women. You know, I've had a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Let's just go. And so it just, I think that's what people would do naturally.
Right.
They're so grounded in, these characters to me are grounded in reality. Even like, you know, I'm from Oklahoma, I went to school in Texas. So like, all the NRA convention and people, like that was my Uncle Andy, my Aunt Peggy with her paint gun. Like, that's
right.
my life. Those are the people that pack guns like to church. So to see that, some people might think that's ridiculous. I'm like, no, that totally would happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the relationship, because we do have people asking in the chat whether Fjord and DeBlanc were gay, and I kind of got the feeling that they were just, they didn't understand, they
yeah.
don't understand sex.
I think it's a companionship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's even, it's more than that in that you have to remember that they're not human.
Yes.
Right. Like, it's easy for us as humans, especially on a TV show. Like, that's one of the great things about the comic books is you get more variation in art style, mm-hmm. where it's hard to relate in, you know, TV because people look like people.
Right.
Just like people. So we see them as humans. You have to remember that they're not humans. They're angels, have been alive for Lord knows how long. And even Cassidy was at least human at some point.
Yes.
So when he's talking to him about sex and things of that nature that are very much human, these things are completely foreign to them. Mm-hmm. You have to remember, if we're talking biblically, angels are just servants.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't, you know, that's why they envy us, because we have free will to do whatever we want, to have sex, have relationships. So all that they know, especially those two, is each other, because they spent each other together for eternity, working, doing whatever they were doing.
That's a good point, because Cassidy even asked, too, like, where do dead angels go?
And he says that's the question.
Yeah, and it really says, like, as a human, you would think, like, what happens when we die and all that, but with angels, he probably never really even thought about that before.
I think I like the fact that... in this story, there's angels that don't have all the answers. They don't know.
That's awesome.
Like Fior even says, when he says goodbye, I've never met God himself, but I've only heard good things. And the idea that not every angel has met God, or he mm-hmm. doesn't know where dead angels go. He doesn't mm-hmm. know what the next move is. So that maybe explains why he's feeling a little suicidal, is because mm-hmm. he also wants to kind of find out what's next. And mm-hmm. that will be the only thing that gives him peace.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he can't return back to the angels. Because he didn't get Genesis, and now that he knows, like, God is missing, as you're talking, I'm like, oh, wow, no wonder he felt suicidal, because literally he probably imagined, I'm going to be alone for eternity.
I wonder if he can even get back. I think, they didn't really explain it, but I think something to do with the phone may have limited their ability to
go back. Or maybe they were just, like, they messed up, maybe so they can't really go back to the home office.
Yeah. Which understands why he hates Preacher, why he hates Jesse, you know, because... He ruined his not life, his afterlife, you know?
Yeah. So he does, but he does ends up kind of getting won over to Jesse and also Cassidy, and deciding to help him as much as he can, but there's not much he can do, it seems, because he says that. Well, I guess he does kind of lie to them and say that he's
straight
gonna,
up lied to him.
Yeah,
because
he says that I'm the only one who could turn off the saint,
mm-hmm.
and I'll do it. And if you head out, it'll be fine. I'll turn him off, and that's why he kind of uses the word right at the mm-hmm. end, and
to draw him.
Yeah. And do you think all along Fiore asked him that because Fiore wanted Angel to come and, like, give him peace?
Yeah, well, I think it is a question of, like, was he going to turn it off, and then he...
Because of being commanded to have peace, that the only way that he could actually have peace is to allow the saint to continue, because he knows how dangerous Jesse is.
Except he could probably get the saint to kill him after turning him off, or, like, well, I guess because he couldn't turn him off. He couldn't, like...
He couldn't.
Because he basically lied to the saint, too. I get the sense that he lied to the saint. That he won't be able to, like... If the saint really kills Preacher, do you think he'll be able to get his family back?
Oh, in that regard?
Because that's the whole motivation for Saint.
Yeah. Right.
And that feels like it was DeBlanc and Fior just being like, well, we got to send out the big gun. And the only way to do it is to kind of lie.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be covered.
Right. I mean, or it could also be the idea that maybe that's what God has kind of promised, but they don't have any connection with God. And it seems mm-hmm. like these two losers just kind of set the big guns rolling without really checking with above. So when he says at the end of the episode, when he finally does confront the saint and says, hey, you'll still get everything, you'll still get your family back, I think that's still a fib, and all you have to do is just kill him. I think that's because he wants peace and he still wants revenge. So he just kind of lets him go. It kind of shows that Fior's not all that good of a guy.
Well, he's always been, out of the two angels, he was always just kind of the selfish one. You know, if we look, he was always the one that... he was just always kind of the more selfish angel.
Yeah.
Where DeBlanc was kind of like, no, we have to do this. This
he
is
was
the
more
right
of the
thing.
Business.
Yeah, we've got to, like, do this.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily... I think it more just has to do with point of view. Because you have to remember, again, that these are angels and not people.
Yeah.
And their whole world is crashing down. Mm-hmm. Because all of the order and stuff that they live by, because not because they want to, because there is no other option,
mm-hmm.
is now going haywire. God is missing. There's a thing that's not supposed to exist that not only exists but has escaped
mm-hmm.
and is down to Earth, and it was our job to watch it. Like, there's a lot of reasons why he feels the way that he feels, and I honestly think that he is justified. It hurts me when I see him betray them, but I understand why he didn't, because right. Genesis is mm-hmm. very dangerous, and Jesse is thick-headed and doesn't want to hear it. Even after seeing it and knowing that it brings the saint, that doesn't ring any bells into him. Like, maybe I should be careful with how I'm using this.
Yeah. And that's why, Jesse gets frustrated because he's not able to gain any more knowledge to where God is, when after talking to Fiore, because Fiore doesn't really know.
No.
He doesn't even really know that God's missing.
No. I mean, isn't that when the kid in the wheelchair comes in? He's like, how do you do it?
And he's like, not going to give away all my secrets.
That's what I love about this show. Like, it just makes you I feel so terrible.
And also the ponchos in the front row, because they're all we're gonna get blood.
It's like Gallagher.
That was such a good detail.
So,
and the blood in this, like that whole montage of him getting killed,
so good.
It's like it's like a masterclass in how to get away with gore on cable television,
right?
Because it's just enough to like make you uncomfortable, but not enough to like outrage people.
And Reggie and Ivan in the chat, they've both said, like, an angel committing suicide makes me uncomfortable. I was like, you got to hold up, because I think this is what the show is all about.
That makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, this show is all about kind of finding the buttons that will make you uncomfortable.
I mean, it's supposed to make you think,
Yeah, I mean,
even if you do believe in all these things, you do have to consider some possibilities of, like, you know, if angels are real, what happens if an angel thinks about when an angel dies?
Yeah.
Where does an angel go?
Like, and also, it's just funny to see someone die and come back all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, even if it's suicide.
And his attitude, too, of just pure stoicism of, like, here I go. I'm back again.
Yeah.
Like,
and then right at the end when he's shot and he doesn't come back and he's booed on stage.
Yeah.
That's also just funny satire with this American kind of
celebrity culture,
being like, oh, you have to do this to please
us.
He's
literally killing himself on stage night after night
for this mindless
audience.
And
he finally kills himself and actually dies, and they boo him.
But the person he replaced, who became kind of his assistant, is this great. I love this whole casino, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
Mumbai-themed
in the middle
there.
Of, like, Texas, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he talks to the Frank Sinatra impersonator who was singing That's Life, and he says to Jesse, all you have to do is follow the music. Never forget the music, because all the answers are in the music. And that makes Jesse realize that he's got to follow the music, since he knows that God is a jazz man.
Hey.
So he must be going to where jazz is home, and that's New Orleans. So that kind of brings us to the next episode. But also, we got to take a little bit of a step back and talk about Tulip.
Yeah,
what happens
to
Tulip? Yeah, because she gets, I think his name is
Gary.
She sees someone named Gary who recognizes her
mm-hmm.
and has this interesting conversation. I thought that scene was so well done, because you have this guy that's like saying only nice things and is talking to her like he's family. But the way they shot it, where they made sure it was a low angle, and he's very imposing,
mm-hmm.
and there's just a tenseness
there. Super tense.
And mm-hmm. you know that Tulip doesn't want
to talk
to him.
And then finally it snaps off.
Yeah.
That fight scene was choreographed so well.
The fight scenes are so good in the show.
They're so good.
Ass.
Yeah.
I, with Jesse, I'm willing to forgive it because I know about his backstory, so I kind of understand why he's like super badass ranger. Tulip, I hope we get a little bit more explanation, because she's almost a little bit too good of a fighter.
I think that's where we're heading. And I think also, and I also think that Jesse and Tulip had this kind of life of crime beforehand.
Right.
So they kind of became...
They've been in that world.
Yeah,
yes.
They kind of became mm-hmm. badass fighters
that
together.
That shot of the camera, the phone, when he's like looking for a signal, they just like created a whole new style of shot. the cell phone signal shot that will be replicated for years
to
come.
What do you mean, like when he's...
Where it was like a POV from like his wrist to just the phone, and you just saw the phone and it was like shaking and like almost like distorted around it as he's like swinging it around trying to get service as he's dragging her along with his other hand.
This had a lot of fun.
Cinematographer killed it.
Yeah, and this it just captured perfectly the movement and the energy that was going on in the room.
Yeah, and this had there's another great set of shots that I'm going to talk about in a little bit in the same episode that I really loved. But this choreography was great, and you also saw him when he's holding the phone. He looks so calm, yet he's
swinging her around into tables and lamps and shit. Yeah,
and she takes the waiter because she's because her and Jesse are waiting to get married.
That's another thing I forgot. That was just so
that long like, list of people.
This is where. It's very much a preacher thing. It's very funny, very commentary, but I very much see Seth Rogen in this, like the comedy. Like just the whole thing they did it. The wait list, like them waiting at the bar with the other couple, and like, we're waiting to get married. Us too.
We're all waiting.
Right. And then when they cancel, the host who's like, "We got a cancellation. Get the next family in here right now." Like it's just oh my gosh.
Also, I love how it's just they decided not to have it be Elvis themed or something. Right. It's still like it's Mumbai
theme. Mumbai theme on its head.
Yeah. It seemed like it was going to be kind of this. I'm very culturally insensitive here, but I don't know if it was like Hindu or if it was. Or if it was a Muslim wedding that they were setting up.
I'm a white guy from Oklahoma.
But they were going for
But they were setting up something
variety,
that was,
for sure.
So different. And I thought that was a great choice because it made it seem like something we haven't seen before. And so she kills him with the buzzer and then goes up to Jesse and kind of breaks his heart by saying that they can't get married because they were engaged to this together before. And we don't know what happened to really stop that engagement. I believe. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong.
They did mention the baby.
Yeah, I thought they were engaged like till the end, to like when she lost the baby. And it just kind of all fell apart. That was my understanding. Yeah.
Right. Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, and they did mention
Carlos,
the baby.
Right? Carlos, that was his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And all that.
Yeah, and then they feel like maybe they're going to be back on track, and I think Custer wants to get there sooner than she does because she also finds out that there's a Victor that's in play here, and we don't know who Victor is, but that's who Gary was supposed to talk to and is trying to connect to. So we don't know who Victor is, if Victor's like... I almost got the sense that maybe Victor is a husband that Jesse doesn't know about.
Yeah, or a crime boss that she was kind of seeing or sleeping with something.
So who knows?
That's what it seemed like, especially with the lady that she bumped into.
Yeah, but she also has like...
but we're not. That's,
but she
whoops,
has, yeah.
Which, whoops.
But she has... That's a moment where because she has these loose ends, she realizes she probably can't get married to Custer right now.
Well, and also, too, and, you know, it's important to mention that Cassidy walks into the room with the body there and knows about this whole thing, and it's another secret that
they're
she is
building
asking
this relationship.
They are building that, because honestly, if somebody, like I've said before, I hadn't read the comics, and I just really kind of got into the show because I wanted to do something different, and also I thought Dominic Cooper was really hot. That was what really kind of... And then I love the show, but... So, but still, I thought, I was like, man, is that what this is all about? It's just like a soap opera thing of like they slept with her and that's it. And that was just, to me, kind of blasé.
Yeah.
But this is to like a whole other level.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, that's what I love about this show is that I think anything you think is going to be the mundane, just wait. And it's not going to be the mundane. It's going to be intensified, changed later.
Yeah. And you do get this sense with Tulip and because she isn't opening up the communication with Jesse, she's just building this relationship with Cassidy, and I feel like that's maybe this love triangle that's there is like super strong, and that's something that I think is much stronger than it is in the books, and so it's a great adaptation because they've almost improved upon this relationship that's there. Just to jump to the end, because we got to get to the next one. But when Jesse comes out and announces that they have to go to New Orleans, there's another great dual shot where it's one of those shots where someone is in the forefront, so the back of them is out of focus, but mm-hmm. it's a split screen, so he's far away, but still in focus. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it so they don't look like they're on the same plane, you know?
Yeah.
And so it looks like they're just in different worlds. So when he says, we're going to New Orleans, and you see her reaction, just be like, not New Orleans. In that shot.
She says it out loud before he even says it.
Yeah.
She's following his train of heart. Like, and then there's actually a bellhop ding noise that plays that was just perfectly timed, which you know they did on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just where it's like ding, and she says New Orleans, and then he says New Orleans.
And they mirror that same shot later when it's the Saint talking to Fior. Mm. It's a very similar shot there.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So they're just building upon the cinematography as well as mm-hmm. the directing, just really strong. Mm-hmm. And so then they decide to go to New Orleans. Anything in this episode that we didn't quite cover? I know there's a lot of fun stuff, but before we move on.
No, I mean, I want to give props to Ruth Negga, too, because, man, she's like, I've been a fan of hers since, like, I loved her when she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. back in Marvel.
Right, yeah.
And then I saw her, if you haven't seen that movie, Loving, a totally
it's
different
so
movie.
So good.
She's fantastic in that.
She should have gotten an
Oscar. But to see her in this third thing now, and every time she's so different, and just what I loved about that New Orleans scene is that, like, it was so subtle, but in her eyes, but you just saw, like, because Tulip is not scared a lot, and you saw to me almost like a fear, and so I just was like, oh, I can't wait to find out what happens to her. Which maybe you did
once you watch it, but why don't you sign off, tell us where we can find you. We'll see you next week.
Yes, everybody, I don't want to be spoiled. You can find me, Matt Marr, 2 T's 2 R's, at the Matt Marr on Instagram, social media, or at mattmarr.tv. You guys, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on this panel.
Yeah, catch up.
Yes, I'm going to
catch
up.
Get out of here. Get out of here because we got to talk about New Orleans.
Have fun.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Okay, great. And we'll all be on the same page next week, so it's going to be fun. So, okay. Now, as I talk slowly while Matt leaves the room, okay, so we're in New Orleans now, and, well, actually, first, before we touch base with New Orleans, the first thing we see, thanks for clearing the stage, is we actually get a little visit with Eugene, where we finally find out what happened with Eugene, a.k.a. soon-to-be Arseface.
Yes.
What happened and how he kind of turned his face into an arse.
More importantly, the way that they played that scene out was great. Because when it first happened, I'm like, ooh, flashback. And then as it's playing out, my mind is thinking, and I'm like, we haven't seen a flashback before on this show.
Yeah.
And once you realize what the scene is, you know, just when he gets into the room and with the girl, and especially when he pulls out the gun, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I, you know, we watched it together, and I looked at you, and that's... When I looked at you, that's what I was saying, was like, this is his personal hell, but I didn't want to say it if you hadn't.
I didn't realize it until they actually rewound, because I forgot that was a device that they set up with the Saint. Because mm-hmm. when the Saint is in hell, he replays his life over and over again.
It seems like it's not just their life, but like maybe the moment they regret most or whatever is the most painful experiences or something, that's what they relive
that's what it
over
like.
And over
his
again.
Most painful and traumatic experience he's going to replay over and over again, which for the Saint was a much longer over the course of a few episodes
drawn out. Yeah,
but for Eugene it was a very small
moment. You go back and watch, they did a supercut of that, and they have it on like YouTube or something. You can watch all, it's like 36 minutes of all of the Saint's stuff.
Cool.
And it's actually a fairly short sequence, you know, his daughter's sick, goes to the store to get the medicine, you know, loses the medicine, then he leaves, comes back to save them, whatever. It's not too long.
And rat water.
Yeah, but it definitely sets the precedent for what we see of this, you know, constant repetition of this, you know, eternal suffering, which I think is a pretty poignant, you know, way to display hell.
Yeah, now we should say, I think it's fair to say in this, without being in the spoilery comic book section, is it different than the comic books.
Yes. I think we're going a different route. I think we may still end up in a similar direction.
Yeah.
But we're definitely going to get
there. He seems like
a
much sweeter boy.
Yes.
In this than he is in the comics, and I think that's kind of a nice direction. We could talk about what happens in the comics.
I don't want to get into too much spoilers, but I think especially with the introduction of Hitler, I think that may have something to do.
Oh, interesting. Okay, we'll talk about that later. But one thing we do see that the little projection hell projector that they have kind of sorts out.
That was really interesting. I need to watch that again.
I have a theory about that, but we can talk about that in the comic book kind of spoiler section.
A list.
But it seems like something is going wrong in hell because when that gets off, we have a guard come and say, "Hey, stay here," and then heads out. And then later on, towards the end of the episode, just to complete his story, he comes out and then he sees Hitler's also there, wondering what's going on. And then you hear all the doors of the cell of...
That's what that noise was.
Yeah, because it says, we're watching captions, so it says cell doors open in the captions.
Did I miss that?
I think you missed it. But like those that popped up, okay. So I was like,
I was thinking that I think that's what that noise is, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. So then they all open up and then that's where we leave him.
I have some theories about that.
Let's save that for a little later when we're in spoiler country.
But quickly with the Eugene flashback, really good, really well played out. It was great to see how all that unfolded. I was really not, had no idea how they were going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it was great. The way that, like, you know, just the dialogue and, like, you really, I don't know. Whereas before, I guess I kind of felt felt bad for that character. Yeah. I forget her name, but the female character.
Right.
Now, you kind of don't feel as bad because she comes off as, like, a bitch and she's, like, really mean to Eugene. And then,
at the same time, you also see him kind of not. It's tragic, but it's not enough to be like, you shouldn't kill yourself over.
No, I agree. But I think that's part of what makes it so sad is because it wasn't like they made a suicide pact to kill each other and like it just didn't go wrong. Like, she was trying to kill herself. He, you know, talks her,
to stop her.
He did stop her.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, makes the friend zone move of the kiss and she goes, ew, and then shoots herself.
Yeah.
So imagine your mental state there. If you finally made the move on your best friend who you love, she says, ew, shoots herself in the head. Her brains go everywhere. Her mom is pounding on the door. You can't get out the window. Not to say that I would shoot myself. You know, I wouldn't be in that scenario in the first place.
He's also a teenager. We got to remember he's a teenager, so he's dealing with very confused emotions.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think
anyone... I feel bad for him. I feel really bad for him.
Like, I really hate the concept of the friend zone and to feel like that there is a friend zone. I think you just got to understand when someone's attracted to you or not. So he kind of makes the bad choice, but that's no reason to shoot himself in the head.
Right.
And it must be so tragic to kind of see that
happen. Also no reason for her to shoot herself in the head.
Yes, no reason for her to shoot.
Gross.
It's like
over-exaggeration.
Yeah, she shouldn't even shoot herself in the head because her boyfriend slept with
someone.
Right,
at all.
That's
awful. If you feel suicidal, please call the suicide hotline.
Yeah, so please.
But to bring some comedy into it, the line she says about, oh, don't worry, I'm still going to heaven, I just did anal, was just...
Also, it's like the fact that you're about to kill yourself.
and you're like,
I'm still going to heaven because I did anal once, but I'm still going to kill myself.
Preacher theme through and through.
That's just, it shows
it's a balance of the dark and the light.
And also
together.
Like how hypocritical it can be when you kind of consider
I'm going to go to heaven
because
I had anal, even though I'm about to commit suicide.
Commit suicide, which some people see as a mortal sin.
Right.
So it's like, what are you accepting? What is like, where are you choosing to be good? Yeah, and where you're choosing to be bad.
Exactly.
That's what I love. And
it's another one of those things of like, one of the things that this series does is it makes you look at faith too and the faith that people have.
Right.
Because like, if you love God or your faith enough, whatever, to not have vaginal sex because you want to save yourself, but you're still going to kill yourself.
Okay. So just to move forward, and we find ourselves in New Orleans. We have Custer and Cass and Tulip driving into New Orleans. Tulip is very dodgy and very much doesn't want to be there because she knows she's going to run into someone that she knows there. And so she basically kind of tries to keep her head low and not be seen at all, which totally fails because she runs into this seems like a wonderful neighbor lady who's just like, I haven't seen you in forever.
Offers to cook for her.
Yeah, I want to cook and make your food, and then just hugs her, and it seems, and even Cass is like, she seems lovely, and then just no.
She goes, shit.
That's like,
guess not.
No, that's the exact wrong person she wanted to run into. And they go into, Cass introduces her to his friend Dennis, who is a guy that only speaks French and is Denis. And he seems like a little hint of maybe of Cassidy's past, but we have no idea what.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that a bit more in spoiler country. But right now, they're kind of Tulip. The last thing we see of Tulip and the last thing we see in the episode, just to kind of complete her story up and move on to Custer, is we see that she gets coins. She knows she gives up $100 because she knows she's not coming back. And she knows she's going to be found at that coin operating, at that laundromat. She just wants smokes. And then we see a bunch of people say, and who work for Victor, say that they found her. So we know, I believe, in next episode we're going to see who Victor is. And we're going to find out a little bit more of that storyline. Because I will tell you, if you don't read the comics, none of this is in the comics. Yeah. And it's great. Yes. It's awesome. And I'm real curious to see where we're going with this.
Yes. I have complete faith in whatever they're doing. The setup looks great.
They've really expanded upon her character.
I feel like she went there to get caught intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also just because she knows she's going to be found, so she might as well do it.
Right. Well, I think especially after seeing, I think especially when she went, shit, it was like, all right, well, Mrs. So-and-so is going to call Victor and be like, guess who I just saw?
Yeah.
So she knows that not only is he looking for her, but he knows that she's in town. You know, it's only a matter of time. You might as well let them, you know, come to you knowing they're coming then.
Yeah.
Come unannounced.
And it's, she has that great, she has that phone call with Jesse where they're uncomfortable. I didn't understand that phone call at first because she seems to want to say something and he wants to hear whatever she has to say, but she doesn't want to say it. But it's kind of a goodbye phone call just in case whatever this Victor thing is going to go to hell. So it's a good thing. Meanwhile, we have Jesse looking for God around New Orleans and kind of becoming a preacher walks into a bar joke by just going to every single bar and says he's looking for God. And we can't forget the very first time he says he's looking for God, it seems to work. And the three of them all get brought down to the basement of this one bar.
They go through three levels of security.
Three levels. I was like, oh, I can't wait to find out what this is going to be.
You want me gun? All three of y'all?
All three of y'all? Yeah. And I think this is the first time we saw a long kind of intro sequence, by the way. I don't think last episode had it. Did I just miss it?
I don't think so either. I think they may have skipped it because of it being like almost a two-parter.
Yeah. So this one we see like a longer intro, and we do see a flash of the dog guy in the longer intro, as well as a little bit of New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, it seems like
we might be staying in New Orleans for a bit.
I don't think we're. I mean, I think we will for at least a couple episodes. But I think, you know, very much like they've said, we're going to be an on the road show. So I think we made a couple episodes, and I have a feeling that as we change locations, we're going to get different intros.
Yeah,
that's the impression that I.
Yeah, that might be the case. And
because
so this one
was very much a New Orleans intro. The image and stuff, and we saw a lot of stuff from the episode that we saw directly.
Which is why we might not have had in the previous episode because this is more of
that was kind of
on the road.
Yeah, they hadn't gotten to their first spot yet. They were still kind of traveling.
So, we meet this dog creature, and then that's a great joke. That's a great moment, and it's also building up kind of the world of Preacher a little bit more because I think there's always this weird kind of undercover kind of
well, Preacher
weird
is
sexcapade stuff going
part
on.
Part of the mythos with all the angels and supernatural things and stuff, it's all about like peeling behind the curtain.
Yeah,
like what do you see? What's behind what you see? What else goes on and stuff? So this very much fits in that theme of Preacher doesn't leave things to the imagination.
Right,
you know, very much plays everything out. So It's a weird reality to think of, but somewhere in New Orleans, there is a bar where if you ask for God, you're going to get taken down to or four levels.
By the way, I think it's the Kitty Cat Club in the show.
Is it?
And I've been to New Orleans, and the Kitty Cat Club, I believe, is a famous bar that's on Frenchman Street. And it's I love New Orleans, and I think I've been to the Kitty Cat Club, and now to know that there's like a weird dog that's a dog man. And also I love how there's that one tourist that kind of was like, oh, you're looking for God, you mean the dog man.
Yeah, like that's there. It's they've been there already.
It's like no, it's not. Yeah. I also love how it looks like Stan Lee is letting them in to like look at the
I know this was an intentional misdirection, but when you first see it, it's like, is this God?
Is this going to be God? Yeah, I think they're setting up these little things like, who do you expect God to look like? Like, we're bringing out these people that could be God, and we're not sure.
Right.
So, and I think that old man is like version, because he kind of looks like George Burns a little bit.
A little bit.
So, and who is kind of a figure of God because of those movies. And so I think they're kind of heading down in those directions.
But it's very a preacher thing to be like, this is a thing. It just is.
Yeah.
There's no explanation. There's no backstory. It just is.
And he does find one person that says, well, if you want to find God, maybe talk to the singer at this one bar. And then he goes and sees a singer who's a knockout. And it was an incredible story and very noir centered, where she claims to have talked to this one guy who knows about God missing, and then was found dead in the swamp. And now she's running away from these people in white who we kind of see burst in. And another incredible fight sequence. So that's great, because now we have two fight sequences in a row. As far as episodes go.
When did he use his voice in the end?
Well, he used his voice to stop the van. He used his voice to stop the van in the fight.
Oh, I must have missed that initially.
Yeah, so he used his voice twice in this episode. At least twice, if not more. Someone could correct me on this. But he uses his voice to stop the van, and then they all kind of pile out of the van, and then he has a fight with them. So he doesn't use it in the fight, which is very Jesse Custer to just use his fists and not use the voice as much as possible.
I thought the van hit the...
No, he says stop. And then later she says, how did you stop the van? And then they got real close.
Right, because I remember her asking him, and I'm like racking my brain, like, what did he say? What did he...
Said stop.
So, yeah, okay.
He said stop, and then later when she's getting all flirty and they're getting close, he kind of...
And she uses it again, too.
He kind of proves that he can use the voice, because she's kind of trying to seduce him.
Testing him.
Yeah, and then she stops. But then we find out it's all for naught. And this was a great intro.
It was so good.
This was a great intro, because I was like, oh, she looks... This is an interesting character who is not in the books, and the singer's not in the books at all. And like, I didn't know where they were going for this, and I was like, great, another new character, another new exploration.
And then they send her off.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and then she takes off the wig, and she is a character we know from the books. And she is like someone who is very important to the story. Mm-hmm. And meets her partner in the van, and she's part of whoever this organization in white is.
And that was the bartender.
And that was the bartender who said you should check him out there. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. That's great. And so we're building up this, whatever this white-centered, white-wearing group is that's kind of after Jesse. Mm-hmm. And we meet Hairstar, which is very exciting for any book readers. Hairstar is the guy with the glassy eye with the scar, already a compelling character. He's got a big stack of files on his desk, and he's got right under Pig is Jesse Custer. So we don't really know how Pig works into this, but it's curious to see, like, okay, he's got all these this stuff, he's after him. It's building up for something great. Also in this episode, we get little hints about maybe Jesse's family. And we get he sees a poster that reminds him, and he goes into kind of a dark haze.
Well, he sees the angel poster.
Yeah, the angel poster, and then he talks about the swamp and how it's a family thing. And I think those are all very important things. Now, did I miss anything?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I think we're actually going to be able to do this. We're going to talk about. Do you have any like predictions that are spoiler free? That's kind of a hard ask at this point. I don't think I do, except maybe, oh, we do have he also goes to listen to jazz music at the end, and he asks for Walk to the Peak, which is the song he keeps trying to figure out because he hears it's God's favorite song. And the guy next to him, who is another
possible candidate for God.
Yeah, I feel like they put another, like, let's put a large fat guy with a beard. A wise man who could definitely almost be God, like, kind of talk to him.
It's good jams,
and say, like, ooh,
man.
It's about the end of the world, man. It's about the end of the world. So,
which I think actually makes a lot of sense in multiple ways. Just from hearing what you hear of the song, it does sound very chaotic.
Yeah.
And two, you know, what's God's favorite jazz song? It's the sound of the end of the world. Is very poetic to just think about.
Yeah. We have a few theories also in the chat, which they don't think God is in New Orleans. Ivan Soto says that, I think that's very true.
I think we know that's true. And that's, the show would be too short.
Right. And Wicked Theory Studio says Saint will come marching into New Orleans, which I think is very definitely going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because we know the only way he can find him is if he uses the voice. And he uses the voice twice in this episode.
Well, he also, you know, Fiora sent him to New Orleans too, so he knows which general direction to head in already.
So he's already on his way. So yeah. Maybe we're not going to be in New Orleans that long.
I'm thinking we're going to see, there's been so much nonstop action. I think that's going to be the pace of the season. So I think we're going
to
see.
I'm curious because it's also hard to do that. It's hard to do a road story, and I think there's a lot they can still do in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have maybe two or three more episodes at the very least.
Yeah, I think we may get two or three, but I think within those two or three, there's not going to be a lot of setup and wait for the next episode for payoff. I think it's going to be a lot of setup, payoff.
Right. Okay, well, I'm dying to know. Okay, now we'll do a quick sign-off before we go into spoiler country. Where can they find you, Nate?
Guys, you can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. It's dog with two G's.
And you can find me at MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com because my name is Dave Child. Okay, now we're getting into spoiler country.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Boy. So if you don't want to know anything about what happens in the books and how it might connect to this, then turn us off now. Thanks for joining us. Rate us 5 stars. We love 5 stars. We need all those 5 stars. But if you know the comics and you want to talk about it some more, please stay with us, and we're gonna have some talk. So where should we start? There's a lot to cover.
Well, let's go back to episode 2.
Okay.
So
let's talk about Arsface a little bit. I want
just real quick.
Okay.
We forgot to talk about in episode 2 how the group knows about the explosion. They know about
the
town.
They know about the explosion. Right. That's very true.
So in terms of comic book
difference, yeah.
I'm a little surprised obviously in the comics, a lot of Jesse's motivation is that he feels guilty about the initial explosion and the town being destroyed.
Uh-huh.
And so that
doesn't seem to register.
It's like
with
non-existent.
Him that much.
And like even and I knew it wouldn't happen to the same way because the events don't play out the same way, but the way that he like it bothers Tulip like way more than Jesse could like give a shit, which I kind of get.
I guess, but I kind of wanted that to be more Arsface's storyline right now,
yeah,
because he's kind of guilty over the fact that Arsface is in hell,
yes,
and he sent him there, and yes, he knows how powerful the voice is because of that,
yes,
but at the same time I want to see it register with him more,
yes,
and they kind of brought it up a little bit at the end of the first episode, but I need to see it more. Mm-hmm. That guilt that's there.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say is that was a big thing for me, because I would consider that a major character motivation, to the point of like when you create a character, like what's their main motivation, and I would put that in there.
Right.
So for them to take that away, them transitioning to Eugene, I think can work.
And according to Ivan Soto in the chat, Dominic Cooper talked about Custer getting darker and darker and not having that much humanity as it goes along.
Correct.
So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm
too
curious to see where they take him. So in the books with Arsface, he initially shoots himself and he has a friend to mimic
Kurt Cobain.
Uh-huh. And I was curious to see how they were going to update that, because having it be Kurt Cobain will be different. This was fine, but I kind of almost wanted it to be shooter related. I wanted it to be about
a
shooting.
It feels like they missed an opportunity that would have been a great social commentary in some regard.
I kind of wish they talked about it being like there was a shoot like there was a school shooting or his friend, he was getting mixed up in the wrong crowd, like he is in the book. Mm-hmm. And he has one friend that just decides to maybe do a Columbine sort of situation, mm-hmm. and he stops it, but in the process shoots himself.
Well, Eugene is a very different character in
yeah.
the show than
he's very
he is
sweet.
In the books. Yeah,
he's a very sweet kid.
He's not in the books.
No.
And that... It
just makes me curious, like, they're probably going to go in a different direction with him entirely, because
yeah.
in the books...
Okay, well, now we can talk about it.
Yeah.
I think this Hitler thing...
What is that?
I
yeah,
think
what
that's.
Do you think?
I think Hitler is what is going to turn him into the angry arseface that we end up
kind of the
we,
cult
that
of personality
know.
That he becomes.
Exactly,
the...
exactly. Because right now he's still so innocent, and like I think it's going to be Hitler corrupting him in whatever way is going to happen. It's going to make him angry at Jesse, angry at the world, or whatever, and create that arseface that we know that ends up becoming that cult personality.
We had someone in the comics also say that maybe he'll come back into the ashes of Anvil and then swear revenge against Preacher. Because there is... Arseface has a few storylines in the books where at one point he wants revenge against Preacher, and then at one point he's friendly against Preacher.
Right.
He's a very sweet kid in the books, too, I would say. He's
nuanced. Yeah.
He just ends up
getting...
He has
a lot to grow.
Yeah. He becomes a cult of personality, kind of a new Kurt Cobain, a new pop singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see if they're going to go that direction
I really hope they do. I think that there's so much to play with there.
Yeah.
I think that... Just the way that they've set up the character, it could work, and that's why I think that that's because the other part is like it's Hitler, you know. Obviously,
right.
they only care so much about offending people, but it's still Hitler. You can't make Hitler a good guy. He has
yeah.
to be a bad guy. He has to play some type of role that makes us, you know, not like him. Even if there's some comedic parts to it, so
right.
that's why I feel like he's really going to be what corrupts. Him, because remember he's not he really shouldn't be in hell. He's that
he
sweet kid.
Be in hell.
He's not
which
there.
Might be
he's,
one of the reasons why hell broke down.
I
also have yeah. Maybe you're thinking the same thing.
I
that
has to do with
the saint.
The saint. I think so. I think so too. I think it has to do. I think what we're seeing is something that happened like right after the saint left.
Yes.
Of where it's like, oh shit, the big beast is out. Like, because she said something about call all security or something to
yeah.
some place.
Also,
so.
You got to remember, hell is not a great place for the saint in the books, because his storyline in the books is this is a big spoiler. For book readers, but he shoots the devil in the head. He
mm-hmm.
kills the devil. That's right. So if maybe he killed the devil on the way out, maybe that's why hell's shutting down. But they could be doing or they could be doing something entirely different.
I don't know about that. I think that would be...
I think they're stepping away from that killing the devil stuff.
I don't know. I think we're going to get there. I just think we'll get there later. I don't think that
yeah.
they will have had that happen and kind of graze over it.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. We also have... We also have Fjord kind of comes to a different end in this, if it's the end of him, because we don't know where Dead Angels go. But in the books, he goes down this... there's no prestige magic stuff in the books. He just ends up doing a lot of drugs and sleeping with a lot of people and kind of gets corrupted that way.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't quite have this, like... dramatic and fun
existential
line.
Crisis.
Yeah, so that was great. That was a great update. New Orleans. So we have in New Orleans, we have one of Cassidy's friends,
mm-hmm.
Dennis. Do you think Dennis is Psy?
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
I think they're doing
I think
a
they
whole,
set it up to be that way as like a
to make
like
him
a nod
maybe
to comic
kind
books.
Of look like Psy.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to do something different with him. He's except for that one character, he feels like a whole different type
mm-hmm.
of character.
Right. I'm curious to see. I'm sure it's going to play into his vampire-ness of him knowing him from years ago or something of that regard.
You know what's one storyline I really hope they do that's in the books, and I think it's still relevant, so I think they could still do it. But in the books, when they go to New Orleans, it's actually Cassidy's past that catches up with
mm-hmm.
him, because there's that whole cult of people wanting to
be
vampires. That, like, remember him from when he was there and kind of hanging out with these goth kids.
Right.
Showing off his vampire skills. I kind of want that again.
Yeah.
I don't. Maybe they'll move away from that, but they're not even building it up right now.
I'm wondering, yeah. I mean, I would love to see that. I feel as though that they're not really limited, though, because they could definitely do that in the future.
Yeah.
I see that as more of a storyline that comes about when more of the main story has been developed and Cassidy has been developed more.
Right.
I think it would be strange at this point to inject that storyline in. I would like it, but I don't know if it would feel natural.
Yeah, we have some people asking. Ivan is asking in the chat who Cy Coltrane is. Just know that he's, because we don't know if he's going to be touched upon. I don't want to spoil too much, but he is an important friend of Cassidy's that ends up kind of going down a much darker route later down. So yeah, so who knows? They might do. I went out into the chat there, but
no worries.
I definitely appreciate you.
Yeah.
So
I feel it.
So with the Tulip storyline, that's not in the books at all. Tulip has a very strong father figure, and it looks like they're building up a whole different world for Tulip, and I can't wait to see where it goes. Besides that, I can't think of anything else that we didn't touch upon.
I think we got it all.
Okay. We do ask. We have the questions. Think we will get the sex detectives? I would be disappointed if we don't. And I hope we get the sex detectives, but that's also going to alienate a lot of viewers.
Yeah.
So,
how do they work that in?
But they're building it up with this dog in the basement.
Yeah.
I think we're heading towards sex detectives. We're heading towards that Jesus-like character.
It's definitely feeling more and more like Preacher every episode.
Yeah. I think they're going to be a bit more sensitive than they are in the books, because the books get a little bit more macho-y.
I think we're going to see a fair amount of changes in terms of things that really push the line, just to pull them back just enough.
So it's curious to see if we get into sex detectives. The books get crazy, and they push a lot of buttons, and they get very sexual. And I think we are going to touch upon that, but not quite yet. I'd like to thank you for joining us. My name's Dave Child. You can find me at MR Dave Child. Nate?
You can find me at DogLikeNate on social media.
All right. Give us all those 5 stars, and we love you. Come back next week. Full panel next week. We'll all be on top of the episode, just talking about one episode and really getting in depth, and it'll be great. So thank you so much. See you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.